companies aren't really looking for you to be right. They're just looking for you to have a point of view, be willing to articulate and defend your point of view, but also be malleable based on where the conversation goes.
Hi, I'm Maggie Bean, and welcome back to the New to Product Marketing Podcast. Before we hear from Vishal, I have a few thank yous. First, to our sponsor, the Product Marketing Alliance. Stay tuned to the end of the episode to learn how you can get 10% off their core certification course. I also want to thank our producer, The Compete Network. If you're a product marketer or competitive enablement professional looking to get more great content, you need to check out Clue's Competitive Enablement Show, also powered by The Compete Network. Every week, host Adam McQueen chats with PMMs, compete pros, CEOs, and investors from around the world of tech and beyond to find out what tactics and strategies they use to get a competitive advantage over the competition. Catch season 3 of the Competitive Enablement Show, powered by the Compete Network, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and wherever else you get your podcasts. And my final thank you is for you, the listeners. This is the final episode of season 3 of the podcast, and I've so enjoyed all the great conversations I've had with you so far this season. All right, without further ado, let's hear from Vishal.
Well, hello, Vishal, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me.
If you could first introduce yourself to the audience, that'd be great.
Yeah, my name is Vishal Naik. I'm a product marketing lead at Google on the Google Assistant team, and I lead our sort of view on Assistant and how it works with other apps, both first party and third.
Perfect. Well, to get started, we're going to go through some lightning round questions. So what is your go-to email setup?
That's a good one. I actually don't really have one. I tend to be really short in emails, but I do put in like way too many exclamation points. So that's my email trademark.
What is the best part of your job?
The people. I think the thing that I like the most about Google and why I ended up coming back. So career history wise, like I was here, I left, I went to another company, I came back. But the main thing that I really like is I can learn something from everyone, and I do learn something from everyone, whether it's an EPMM or my senior director. There's something to take from every conversation, and I just really appreciate that energy.
And what is something you are new to?
Large-scale consumer products. I mean, most of my career has been in B2B, but what drew me to this role on Assistant is, the ability to reach millions of people on a daily basis in global regions, and it's just something that is like a core part of someone's day.
New challenge for sure. And what is your product marketing superpower?
Patterns. So I tend to look for a common denominator across a series of somewhat disconnected items. And I feel like that helps me personally in a variety of places, whether it's crafting messaging or managing stakeholders or helping drive a product marketing strategy. But it's really about how can I like take all these different pieces of information and pull them together into a common thread.
Love that. And to get into the main topic of today, we're going to be talking about interviewing and your experience both evolving from somebody who was interviewing for product marketing jobs to now being on the other side as a hiring manager and hiring your own team of product marketers. So if you could just start off and you could tell me a little bit about your career journey so far and how you ended up in product marketing.
Yeah. So I actually started in marketing because in college, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And a friend of mine needed interns for her job at the athletic department at my school. And so I signed up because I was like, well, I don't know what I should do with my day. And I actually really enjoyed it. And so from there, I started exploring what, you know, just a general career in marketing would be, not really knowing the specialization of product marketing yet. But that was like the starting point. I ended up going to a small hardware manufacturer. We did a lot of events and graphic design there. And that sort of parlayed into a larger technology reseller. And while my first role there wasn't really called product marketing, success in that role came down to thinking like you were an owner of a business line. And so I jumped around at that company. I was there for a really long time. So I did demand gen, web marketing, corporate events. But where I had the most fun was running that product line. And then in a parallel work stream, as the SaaS market picked up, and my wife, who's also in product marketing, sort of helped me realize this, that more traditional PMM role And that opportunity was that opportunity to map what I liked to do with where the market was going. Software sales had much healthier margins than hardware sales, much more differentiation between competition. And then as I got into that space and jumped around into other companies and started to see what product marketing looks like in different organizations, and playing off my current role at Google, I realized that what it takes to be successful in a product marketer here is the same as what it took to be successful in that first role, just a true ownership of your product and a want to explore all of the paths that it will take to drive growth. So I kind of backed into it, but it's been fun. It's been an interesting career. I've really enjoyed what I've done, and yeah, that's kind of my path from being a junior in college with no clue of what to do with my day to being a PMM at a large and reputable company.
So how has your perspective changed about interviewing from applying and interviewing for product marketing roles yourself to hiring your PMM team?
So I think the big thing is landing context. I'll admit I can definitely give like a 10-word answer. 101-word answer is would suffice. But what makes that hard when you're interviewing and when you're looking at the interview process from the person that's hiring is that you really only have a finite amount of time in that interview, and the interviewing process, like for better or worse, is set up to minimize bad hires, even if there is an expense of overlooking what would be a good hire. And so when you end up spending too much time on a single answer, it makes it hard for the interviewer to get a full picture of your background and your role. So I'd say my perspective has really changed around trying to tell the most complete story that I can around the question to how can I land the right amount of context and deliver results around that. And so I tend to try to use the STAR method so that storyline can stay linear. And I also try to script answers beforehand, not so that I can go into an interview and read them, but so that I can build the habit of highlighting only what's relevant and then seeing the full scope and then knowing what to cut so that when a question comes up, I have that process down of like, I know I want to be talking for a set amount of time. I have a mental clock as to when I need to get through and really kind of land the question and the results in a nice, concise window. So I'd say that's been my real change is like really valuing brevity, but the right amount of context versus the full story. Because an interviewer is probably going to ask follow-up questions. And so you don't need to offer up every detail at once. It makes it, you know, just make for a more flowing conversation and give, you know, the first few bits and then, you know, let the conversation go where it needs to.
Absolutely. Also, if you can hear my cats biting in the background, let me know.
I definitely can't. I actually did ask my dogs to stay in the living room, which they're like super excited about being on the couch, but they would normally be in here. Like they tend to wait for me to be on calls to argue with each other. So
for sure. Totally. Yeah. If I'm also looking over there, I'm just trying to make sure they're not killing each other. So fun stuff. And you mentioned this STAR methodology. Like, I'd love if you could like walk us through kind of the steps of that and how people could employ that when answering questions.
Yeah, so I think it stands for situation, task, actions, and results. And so those are your essentially four bullets in your response. And so as you're responding to a question, you kind of start with the situation and context, but you by knowing you have three other areas to get to, you can't anchor too hard. You're just trying to set the stage so that the person on the other end knows what, you know, sort of context you're dealing with. Then you get into task, like what was the specific action? Sorry, action is not the right way of saying it because action comes next. But what was the specific task that needed to happen to solve the business problem? And then the action comes in as what did you do to do that? And then results. So how did that all come together? So something like, you know, we were trying to launch a product. We had a lot of competition in the market. We weren't truly differentiated situation. And then so task, we really needed to find the way in which we would really highlight our differentiation and our secret sauce as to why a customer should buy our product. So then getting into task action then goes into, you know, I led some messaging research, did a workshop internally, brought in an agency. We really like sort of thought through what is the specific message and tested with our audience. How does this resonate? And what is the believability that this is something that we can deliver that is differentiated from someone else? And then results, you know, as we tested that and as we put it into market and started running campaigns, we saw better engagement with our posts. Our email open rates went up by X percent because we were starting to talk in this way. Our messaging research showed that prospects had, you know, an 8% lift in interest or preference. And so then you end up saying, like, you know, the question of, you know, drafting messaging is really now a story on we needed to land differentiation. It was a highly competitive market. We understood that. This is what we did to do it. And we had some results around it. And so that way you're getting a full picture, but you're also introducing enough that you, when you bracket that against trying to answer a question in a finite window of time, you kind of have that like scarcity brings clarity mentality where it's like, I need to only pull out what's important and then let that interviewer then ask like, okay, who are some of the other competitors in that space? Because I mentioned that it was highly competitive market. I can list that. What were some of the actual product differentiators that you had? I can then sort of go into that. Like it allows for enough opportunities to go deep in the question without me having to offer it all up front.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I know you were saying like you really like that methodology because of context. I think it really shows impact as well. Like you're not just saying like, oh yeah, I did this task, but I got these results. And I moved like this business shift forward and like this is what I did for the business and this is the value like I provided at the role. So I think that's a really, really like well formatted way to think about things for sure. So can you think back to an experience where a product marketing candidate truly just like hit it out of the park, knocked your socks off, whatever other metaphor you want to employ there, in an interview? And what did they do that was impressive to you?
Yeah, for sure. This is actually a startup that I worked at a few years ago. There was an intern who interviewed with us, and we actually didn't even have an internship open. He just cold reached out and was like, hey, like, I've seen, you know, X results from you. You know, this is what my sort of specialty is and would love to chat with you guys. And I thought that it was really interesting because he came into that interview in an opportunity that he created. He did his research on us as a company. He knew where we were in market, who our competition was. He was looking at, you know, some of the content that we had created and seeing how that was resonating with the market. And so he really came in as more of like an outside consultant that was like, you know, here are some things that you guys are doing. Here's like where I have expertise in this field. And here's some things that I think that you could do. And he knew that, hey, we had a spike in traffic at this time and plateaus and others, because there's a lot of, you know, free sources of information where you can find some basic information. Like we're not talking about like PII level or even like access to Google Analytics, but you know, there's some free tracking tools out there. And so he came in with that research. He put a lot of critical thought into it. He brought data. He had a perspective. And I think that was the main piece, is that he came in with the perspective and with research. If I think about it, like companies aren't really looking for you to be right. They're just looking for you to have a point of view, be willing to articulate and defend your point of view, but also be malleable to at based on where the conversation goes. But it's really important that you have a perspective. And he did that and he showed that and he offered that up. And so we actually ended up creating a role for him and hired him. So I think that was an area where someone like really, you know, shined through and was like, wow, that was a really impressive showing, because, you know, like I said, he had a perspective and he did research and he came in willing to, you know, have a conversation with us. And you know, we were better off. He ended up building a lot of videos for us, sort of created our social strategy on how we want to promote these things and how we tell product stories through other mediums. And it was just a, you know, and it was an opportunity that he created for himself.
Yeah, that's kind of like they go back to, I forget what stat it is, that how many job postings like are actually posted. Like you either get it through like a backdoor referral or like knowing people or creating an opportunity yourself even. And I think like I don't want to like misquote it, but like it's a good chunk for jobs. So I think that that's a lesson too of trying to find those like different niches. And it seems like you're at a startup, right? You were saying, so like that there probably was more opportunity for
that. Yeah, that company was a startup. There was more opportunity for that. I've actually never gotten a job that way. I've only gotten jobs by either recruiters reaching out to me or me applying through things online. But that said, it's definitely true in which like when jobs are created, you know, the thought process is like, or at least when I have created jobs, I've generally thought about things as like, I need to get X thing done. It's really hard to articulate that into a job rec. And I probably have something or someone in mind as I'm creating that. And so a lot of times with roles, as they've been created, you know, they're modeled after someone you've worked with or something that you've seen in market. And so, you know, that does breed that opportunity to just network and say like, hey, let me pull in someone that I already know, or let me do this, like, you know, find this referral or reach out to someone off, you know, offline and just see if we can make that role work, as opposed to it being just like a public posting and let me see how many people apply and let me filter through the resumes. It does make things a little bit easier. Cause like I said, like interviewing's very much inexact. Like it's tough to find, the person that you want. And so when you do sort of create something and you do get that referral, it actually helps the process, or it helps the trust for the hiring team, simply because, you know, there's something behind the candidate. There's a referral. There's someone that you know. There's some work sample that you have already experienced, as opposed to it being a resume that you are reading for the first time and a person that you've had maybe a 45-minute or 1-hour conversation with, and then you make the decision that, hey, we're going to work together for, you know, the next X time frame. I think I read somewhere the average tenure in tech is like somewhere around 2 years. So it's like, hey, we're going to talk for 1 hour, but you and I are going to work together for 2 years, maybe more, maybe less. But like that ends up being, does play into what you're saying, because that's kind of why, you know, that exists for you to get jobs through other means.
Right. And I think in product marketing too, like, that team fit is so important, because it can be so collaborative depending on the team you are. Like, I think the amount of time that I am talking to my boss, and it is the most out of any job I've ever had, just because a lot of it is like where we're reviewing messaging together, like we're working on projects together. It's very collaborative. So having somebody that you're trusting, you can trust in that position, and also to spend that much time with, like that's a finite amount of time that you're trying to make that decision. So totally see
it, sure,
at least from your perspective. On the other hand, what are things you've seen in the application or interview process that are yellow flags or signs someone might not be a fit?
Yeah, for sure. I think personality fit really comes through in an interview, to what, you know, we were just talking about. You spend a lot of time with your teammates, especially in product marketing. You spend a lot of time with your product managers. Spend a lot of time with your core team, with your manager and your peers. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you want to be excited about who you're working with. I had a recruiter at a previous company. The way he phrased it to me is like, if you don't leave an interview saying, and he used a little bit more colorful language than this, but if you don't leave an interview saying like, heck yes, I want to work with this person, then it's a pass. And it's a very like, that's not super tangible. That's like very much a feel thing, but it's like, how, you know, are you excited about who you're going to work with on a day-to-day basis? So personality fit really comes through. But a bit more tangibly, I think it really reads as a yellow flag to me when answers at a very high level can appear to be inauthentic. I'm not like assuming that anyone is like lying on their interview or in their resume. Like that's definitely not the case. But when things just don't pass the smell test, and you have to ask a lot of follow-up questions, that tends to erode a little bit of trust. And so, an example of this is I interviewed for someone a few years ago, and he had on his experience resume as an intern for a movie studio in Hollywood. And he had a bullet point on that resume as to how he was the one that created a tagline for a billboard for a movie premiere. And I'm like, that would be amazing. Like, I would love to do that. I always wanted to work in marketing for films. But I feel like a major Hollywood studio would either have an agency or a copywriting team be the one that's creating, you know, a billboard on a multi-million dollar campaign versus an intern. And so it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, he might have been involved. He might have been, you know, in the room and been a collaborator. And I think just the way of articulating on the level of involvement in a way that aligns would have helped. And like, look, if he did that, like, fantastic. That's great. Like, all the power to him. But that's sort of one of those things where it's like, it's an inexact science, and I'm trying to make sure I don't hire the wrong person. And there's a potential caveat that I might pass on the right person. But that was the thing that really came through, is like, as I was talking to him and going through that experience, it just didn't really feel like, you know, he did write that tagline. And along those same lines, but a bit more subtle, it tends to also read like a little bit of a yellow flag when you see a resume where a candidate has been at a role for a very short time, but their resume is, the real estate on the resume is proportionately giving a little bit too much weight to that role. So say you've been in a role for like 4 or 6 months, but it has half of your front page versus the role previous to that you're up for 2 years and it has a third of your front page. Kind of shows like, how did you suddenly make so much impact in 4 to 6 months that you didn't make in the previous 2 years? Or, you know, are you listing your charter that you maybe haven't really landed yet? And so just some of those like more subtle ways of showcasing, like, you know, showcasing authenticity. Those are really important. And then, you know, the big red flag is arrogance. You know, if you come across as like you're not really humble, then it doesn't really matter what you've done.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, to be in the perspective, we're in the position that I think a lot of people getting into product marketing are, where they don't really have any direct PMM experience. They're trying to position their experience, but I think it's a good reminder to not overstate it to the point where you're being inauthentic and that it's coming off as inauthentic. Like, sometimes you have to authentically be like, yeah, I haven't done this specific thing. I have done these things and I have these skills and this is how it could apply, but overstating what you've been doing, like, just to try and be as close to the rec as possible, sometimes can backfire. So it's a really interesting thing to call out.
Yeah, and I think like there are a lot of transferable skills in other types of roles. You know, I think like storytelling isn't just a product marketing function. Like, you can be in content marketing and demand gen and PR, even as a CSM. If you're in a different type of role, like, you'll need to understand, like, how do you craft a narrative to drive a conversation through. You know, empathy for the customer, I think that's a field that's a skill that comes from a lot of different fields. Again, like, if you're a customer facing role, a CSM, a salesperson, and an SDR, like, you're going to need to have, you know, customer empathy, and like, you'll have to understand your personas and be able to know how to talk to, you know, like a buyer versus an influencer in that decision-making process. And, you know, a big thing when in product marketing, the stakeholder management and project management, like, a lot of roles talk with a lot of teams. And so it's really around how you frame the information and what you've done around those core competencies, versus trying to say like, hey, the job rec says launch X product. Like, it's, you know, I think especially at the type of level that you're interviewing for, I think you can really frame it more around some of the underlying skills that would promote success in the PMM role versus trying to overstate what you've done to make it seem like I've been doing PMM work from another capacity. It's really, I've been doing work in another capacity. I'm interested in product marketing. I could do it well because I've done these similar skill sets.
So, speaking of skill sets, what skill sets do you need to showcase at different levels of your career? So, for example, if you're interviewing for an associate product marketing manager role versus a more senior level?
Yeah, I think there are two main focus areas. And so I'd say, like, you know, some of the more mature companies I've worked at do have like rubrics for job levels. And so in like skimming through those, I think that the two things that that really come out are dealing with ambiguity and stakeholder management. And so, you know, as you think about like ambiguity in a more junior role, if you come across something that's really unclear, you might need direction as to how you would solve that. In a medium, mid-tier role, you might be like, okay, this is really unclear, but I have some ideas, like this is how I want to tackle it. Like, I'm just going to like charge through and I'm going to figure it out. And in a more senior role, you might see something that's really unclear and then be able to synthesize it in your mind and then articulate a plan to lead other people through it. And so I think that level of like, you know, showcasing ambiguity. So as you're going into an interview process or as you're thinking about, you know, different roles, it's really around like, are you able to do the work of that next level by, you know, showcasing like, you know, this one big thing of, you know, can you manage ambiguity? So I would say that's one big thing. And then stakeholder management, you know, in a more junior role, you might not have enough experience or you might not feel as comfortable trying to lead other teams through a process versus in a more senior role, you might feel very comfortable telling a product manager, like, this is what we need to do, or telling a PGM, like, this is how I want to structure things. And so how you sort of command the room. And so I think those two areas, like your network, your sort of sphere of influence, like how are you managing the people around you? And then also how are you, you know, seeing through something that's messy? Because product marketing is that type of role where it isn't super well defined. You're like, launch a product. There's a lot of caveats that could come into that. And so launching a product that's just like managing the bill of materials versus launching a product that is, you know, pulling in customer sentiment and looking at competitive intel and figuring out like there might be a potential roadblock, you know, around the corner if we go down this path. So we need to sort of pivot early. Like that level is what differentiates more senior versus more junior roles, in my opinion.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm going to jump into some Q&A questions from our NeedAKM community. Super excited. So thanks for sending these in, guys. Start off, I know we just talked about this a little bit, but I would love to know if you don't have explicit PMM experience, I know you mentioned storytelling, but what other transferable skills would you highlight when you're applying and interviewing to PMM roles?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest one is knowing the customer, knowing your different types of personas and being able to empathize with them and understand how to build a plan that can manage those personas. And so I think that's a skill that you can definitely learn and will drive in other capacities. You know, if I think of the communications team at Google, they're heavily involved in a lot of our external content. So blog articles, press releases, you know, crafting a narrative. So, you know, if you're coming in from PR into product marketing, like that storytelling component of how do we really want to shape this story around being customer first? I think that's definitely a comparable skill. And then, you know, if you think of just core PMM things that people have to do, you know, you have to work cross-functionally. That's not a thing that's product marketing specific. So how, you know, if you're in a different capacity, how are you managing different internal stakeholders and project management and time management? You know, if you think to like managing a bill of materials for a launch, there's a lot of PGM skills required there. But again, like there's a lot of work streams and other capacities in a company that will learn those same things. And so how are you packaging all of those things up around driving product growth and caring about the customer and the customer's usage of your product? I think those are, you know, skills that any type of role can highlight as to like why you're interested. And I think like the big thing going back to, you know, what we talked about previously on that like interviewer that knocked it out of the park at that internship or that intern role for that startup, like you come in with a perspective. And so if you're coming in from from PR or from an SDR role, or you're, you know, wanting to get into product marketing, and you come into it with like, you know, I've looked at some of the things that we've done as a company, like some of the product launches that we've done, you know, and you start asking PMM questions like, you know, how did we, why did we launch it this way? Like, what was our thought on competition? Like, this is what I was hearing from the customer base when we launched this. That really showcases that you're thinking like a product marketer, and that does, you know, build that trust for that interviewer or that person on the other side to say like, yeah, maybe you would fit in this role. Cause I think there is definitely opportunity for some of that lateral movement within an organization from a different role, or even as you're going from a different role into PMM at a new company. I think, you know, having that perspective while mapping it to those skills is really important.
So this is a hot topic, controversial. Have you ever done any cases in your interview process? If so, what is the best way to prepare for those?
My hot take on this is like to go all in on it. Like, I know it's kind of hard. I have been on the interviewing side where we've asked questions and candidates have said like, I don't necessarily feel comfortable doing that level of work because what if I don't get the job and you take my idea? Very valid concern. I'm not trying to gloss over that. I just use your gut when you're a candidate as to where you're interviewing. If it's a company with a reputation, like they're actually trying to introduce a new area in the interview loop, so that they can make sure to not weed out good people that maybe don't interview great. And so I think that's like, because if you really think about it, like interviewing well is its own skill. You could interview great and like not really be good at the job, but you might get more roles. And so the case study is a way to say like, let me like let your work be that equalizer. And so if you're interviewing at a reputable company, I think you just kind of have to go all in. And you know, I can say from my previous company, the way that the case studies were structured was to do a go-to-market plan on a new product that that company was going to launch. And so I could definitely see like, hey, like candidates might be like, hey, you haven't launched this product, like you want my ideas, like, you know, or you just go like crowdsourcing so that you can fill this role. But what I will also say is that no one looked at those case studies after the interview. Like no one referenced back to it in the launch. Like there was no like, hey, here's this database of, you know, 10 or 15 cases on this, on launching this product. Let's like pull these ideas. It was really just to understand, how do you think, how do you work, and anchoring it into something that requires the least amount of context for the interviewing team. So I would say like, best way to prepare, go all in, ask a lot of questions on what the other team is looking for, because I think that makes things hard. I went into, I had a case study with a company, a very well-known creative software company. The instructions were, here's a product, like GTM it. And I'm like, I have no idea what you mean, but let me just like jump in. I totally bombed. I did not get the job. In hindsight, what I had put together in that go-to-market plan wasn't necessarily what they were looking for in a go-to-market plan. It was more of a product launch plan than a strategy. And so it's a matter of like asking questions. Now, you know, you're not always going to get great answers, because their response back to me was like, I'd like to see what your interpretation of this question is, which made things hard. Yeah, just think of it as, you know, they're trying to like frame your mental model of the case study as the company is trying to see how you work rather than trying to make a decision based on how you talk.
Yeah, that makes a lot.
Makes it a little less painful to do it. It's still not a lot of fun and really stressful, but
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Empathize with people who are shuttling through those, but I think you make really great points there. So does the size of the company change what people look for in product marketing candidates in your experience? And if so, like in what way may that change what people are looking for?
I don't actually know about the size of the company influencing what people would look for in a PMM role. I think how the company is structured or how the team is structured will definitely influence, because there are different types of product marketing roles. So I can say, like, the team that I'm on at Google, product marketing is very 0 to 1, meaning, like, you know, we are looking for ways in which we could conduct research, in which we could craft narratives, in which we could really help product with their strategy, and really find the swim lane for where marketing can help product with their strategy and where marketing can help user research. And that's kind of where this role is. I have seen other roles, other teams at my current company that view product marketing as very much like, we are already a scaled product and we need to drive ongoing growth. And that's like managing much more around managing launches and building campaigns to drive awareness of features versus helping to create features. And so I think it's less around size of the company, because I've definitely seen smaller companies treat product marketing in different ways. I've actually, every company I've worked at has treated product marketing differently. And sometimes it's around creating content, creating stuff for sales, writing blogs. Sometimes it's just launching products and you know, bill of materials execution. And sometimes it's around actually doing research and narrative creation and storytelling. And so I think less than the size of the company, you know, in interviewing, ask questions about the style of which, you know, the company wants or is expecting a PMM to add value between, you know, inbound versus outbound versus content. And I think that'll kind of help, you know, frame what the company is looking for. But, you know, I don't necessarily know that size is the common denominator between those nuances.
For sure. So thank you so much to the Noon PMM crew for sending in those questions. And I just have a few questions to close out today's episode. If you could go back to your first day of being a product marketer and give yourself a piece of advice, what would it be?
Talk to more salespeople. My first PMM role was a B2B company. So getting more in touch with the sales team and learning from what is and isn't working from customers was extremely helpful. I eventually got there, but if I had added that to my strategy from day one, you know, that could have produced results faster for some of the my starter products. So talk to more salespeople, get in front of customers, like really hear from your audience directly as much as you can.
Totally second. So underestimated, especially in you first start roles. And what is a skill you're looking to grow over this year?
This is a tough one. I think there's two main things. I think, you know, specific to my current role, you know, Google is a company that has very broad reach. You know, we are very cognizant about being helpful to users without being intrusive. And so how you balance exciting marketing with regulation is a interesting challenge. So I'm looking to get better at that in my consumer skills. And then the second piece is just like ongoing empathy for other employees. I mean, I think it's a skill that every product marketer has to have, but I think it's also a matter of, you know, there's a lot of really smart, really talented people that you work with, and changing your mental model from being, you know, I am smarter or as smart as everyone else in this room, and not getting into the imposter syndrome of everyone else is smarter than me, but really going into it as, you know, there is something that I can learn from you and there's something that you can learn from me. And let's have this be like a nice real conversation between like two people that have a common goal. I think like continuing to hone that, I think, is just an ongoing skill that I don't think I'll ever be great at, but it's a thing that I want to be better at, better tomorrow than I am today, and continue that cycle on a daily, weekly, monthly basis.
That is the ultimate balance. So I think that's a great thing to work on for sure, and hard. Do you have a book or podcast recommendation for our listeners?
Actually, I have two book recommendations. Everybody Writes by Anne Handley. It's not specifically a product marketing book, but so much of the role revolves around content and how you're shaping a narrative and how you're talking to an audience. And whether that's writing content that will live externally, whether that's a blog or a deck or working with a sales team, or also like just how you talk to your stakeholders internally. I think just the thought process and the structure around narrative creation and how to communicate in a concise way, I think that's a very easy to read book that I have referenced many times over the years. And then the second is Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni. So much of product marketing is cross-functional. And so the fundamental or foundational basics of building trust, productive conflict, achieving buy-in, they all really play well into having this ownership mentality where you can manage your product line like it's your business and you can really kind of carry things forward. So those would be my two. Both very short, very quick reads and things that have stayed with me over the years.
Great. Thank you for those. And any final thoughts for our listeners?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head, but if anyone has any questions, like please reach out to me on LinkedIn. Happy to connect, happy to chat with anyone offline. Through the chats that you've set up, I've had a couple of side conversations with a handful of new product marketers. And so, I think the main thing is I just want to be as helpful to others as I wish was readily available when I was at that stage in my career. So, no one will help you out or respond to you if you don't ask. So it never hurts to ask. So, if anyone has any questions or wants to follow up or just has a specific challenge that they're facing, I would love to just be of some value to anyone out there. So.
Well, thank you so much for that and your continued support of the community. We really appreciate you and other mentors in the community of giving back in that way. It is so appreciated by myself and everybody else. So thank you for that. And thank you for being on the podcast today. It was great having you.
Awesome. Thank you. And appreciate you setting this up and best of luck in continuing the series and treading forward. It's awesome to see.
Thank you so much for joining us for today's episode. And thank you to our sponsor, the Product Marketing Alliance. From research to optimization, the Product Marketing Core Certification by the Product Marketing Alliance explores the A to Z of product marketing. Whether you're new to the industry or a seasoned PMM, with Product Marketing Core, you'll have a richer understanding of the what, why, and how of every product marketing principle. I took the course last fall, couldn't recommend it enough, and you can get 10% off with our code NEWTOPMM at discount, as with every other Product Marketing Alliance course. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Bye.